Demigod,
the first demigod,
Etasya,
Etasya,
of this universe,
Gunavisarakasya,
the creation of the three modes of material nature, Varibrimhanam, the welfare,
Anudhyana,
always thinking of,
Vyavastita,
Abhipraya, by whom the ultimate purpose,
Atma,
the Supreme Self,
Yoni,
whose source of birth,
Kapila,
all,
Nigama,
Nijagana,
by personal associates,
Pariveshtita,
being surrounded,
Svabhavana,
from his own abode,
Avatara,
descended.
Translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continues. The first created being and most powerful demigod in the universe is Lord Brahma, who is always responsible for developing universal affairs. Born directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he dedicates his activities to the welfare of the entire universe, for he knows the purpose of the universal creation. This supremely powerful Lord Brahma, accompanied by his associates and the personified Vedas, left his own abode in the highest planetary system and descended to the place of Prince Priyavrata's meditation. You could say it to him. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued. The first created being and most powerful demigod in this universe.
The first created being and most powerful demigod in this universe.
Is Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma,
who is always responsible for developing universal affairs. Born directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He dedicates his activities to the welfare of the entire universe. For he knows the purpose of the universal creation. The supremely powerful Lord Brahma, accompanied by his associates and the personified Vedas, left his own abode in the highest planetary system,
and
descended to the place of Prince Priyavrata's meditation. Srila Prabhupada's report. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Self, Atma, is the source of everything, as explained in the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadhyasya Yataha. Because Brahma was born directly from Lord Vishnu, he is called Atma, Yoni. He is also called Bhagavan, although generally Bhagavan refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, Lord Krishna. Sometimes great personalities, such as demigods like Lord Brahma, Narada, or Lord Shiva, are also addressed as Bhagavan because they carry out the purpose of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma is called Bhagavan because he is the secondary creator of this universe. He is always thinking how to improve the situation of the conditioned souls who have come to the material world to enjoy the material activities. For this reason, he disseminates the Vedic knowledge throughout the universe for everyone's guidance. Vedic knowledge is divided into two parts, Pravritti Marga and Nivritti Marga. Nivritti Marga is the path of negating sense enjoyment, and Pravritti Marga is the path by which the living entities are given a chance to enjoy and and at the same time are directed in such a way that they can go back home, back to Godhead. Because ruling over this universe is a great responsibility, Brahma must force many Manus in different ages to take charge of universal affairs. Under each Manu, there are different kings who also execute the purpose of Lord Brahma. It is understood from previous explanation that the father of Dhruva Maharaj, King Sultan V, ruled over this universe because his elder brother, Priyavrata, practiced austerity from the very beginning of his life. Thus, up to the point of the Prachetas, the kings of the universe were all descendants of Uttanapada, Maharaj. Since there were no suitable kings after the Prachetas, Swayambhuva Manu went to the Gandhamara hill to bring back his elder son, Priyavrata, eldest son, Priyavrata, who was meditating there. Swayambhuva Manu requested Priyavrata to rule over the universe. When he refused, Lord Brahma descended from the supreme planetary system known as Satchaloka to request Priyavrata to accept the order. Lord Brahma did not come alone. He came with the other great sages like Marichi, Atreya, and Vasishtha to convince Priyavrata that it was necessary for him to follow the Vedic injunctions and accept the responsibility of ruling over the world. Lord Brahma also brought with him the personified Vedas, his constant associates. A significant word in this verse is for Bhavanath, indicating that Lord Brahma descended from his own abode. Every demigod has his own abode. Indra, the king of the demigods, has his own abode, as do Chandra, the lord of the moon planet, and Sura, the predominant deity of the sun planet. There are many millions of demigods, and the stars and planets are their respective homes. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Yanti deva vratta devan. Those who worship the demigods go to their different planetary systems. Lord Brahma's abode, the highest planetary system, is called Satchaloka, or sometimes Brahmaloka. Brahmaloka usually refers to the spiritual world. The abode of Lord Brahma is Satchaloka, but because Lord Brahma resides there, it is also sometimes called Brahmaloka. So I'll read the text again in translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continues. The first created being and most powerful demigod in this universe is Lord Brahma, who is always responsible for developing universal affairs. Born directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he dedicates his activities to the welfare of the entire universe, for he knows the purpose of the universal creation. This supremely powerful Lord Brahma, accompanied by his associates and the personified Vedas, left his own abode in the highest planetary system and descended to the place of Prince Priyavrata's meditation. So here we have in this developing story Prince Priyavrata being put into a delicate situation, a dilemma, where he's receiving contradictory instructions from authorities. So we understand earlier there were two sons of Swayambhuva Manu, Priyavrata and Uttanapada. And who was Swayambhuva Manu's father? Brahma himself, right. So Brahma produced Swayambhuva Manu, first Manu in creation. And so this was the system of universal government of Manus in every day of Brahma. There's supposed to be 14 Manus. And they're a kind of universal monarch. And for the well-regulation of the whole system of the universe, the system has to go on. So after quite a few generations down from Uttanapada, Priyavrata, although the elder son, under the instruction of Narada Muni, he took to meditation and austerity and didn't take up the business of being a king, although that's why Swayambhuvamanu, that was a royal line. He didn't do that, engage in any family life or any worldly affairs. So he retired. His younger brother, Uttanapada, then had Dhruva, his son, and he actually, and then finally, way down the line, after Prithu, we get the Kuchetas, and so on. So now, all of a sudden, they run out of candidates for the position of Manu. So Swayambhuva Manu went back to his older son, who was still meditating, and said, okay, now it's your turn. I would like you to come and take up this management position in the universe. And the Priyavrata was perfectly happy. He was cultivating the spiritual life. And he saw this as a danger to his spiritual cultivation, his business of getting involved in all these affairs, at the counter and so on, manage the effort. So, Swayambhuva Manu decided he needed reinforcements. After all, Priyavrata was acting under no small authority, Narada Muni. So here are reinforcements come, in state. Notice, this is really going to see that no less than four Mahajans are going to be there at this time. Finally, Swayambhuva Manu, Mahajana, Brahma, Mahajana. Lord Shiva, who's with Brahma, he's Mahajana. Narada Rishi is also there, he's Mahajana. So these bigger, more great authorities are all at the soon important to them. So here Brahman is descending in state. And just to impress upon Priyavrata his authority, he is surrounded by the personified Vedas. That what you're going to get from Brahma is no small opinion to be brushed aside. Even it might be considered outweighing Narada Muni, who's also son of Brahma. Anyway, and Brahma's also Narada Muni's spiritual master. That's our sampradaya, Brahma Narada Vyas. So Narada Muni, he's also instructed spiritually from Brahma. From Brahma from Vishnu. This is the simple succession. So Brahma, it comes clear from this verse, has more than just the simple duty of managing the mode of passion and creating the universe, but also he has another always thinking of the welfare of the universe. So Brahma is engaged in the spiritual welfare work also. So this is his preoccupation. And so, two things are there. How to improve, it says here, trying to think how to improve the situation of the conditioned souls who have come to the material world to enjoy material activities. He says, for this reason, he disseminates the Vedic knowledge throughout the universe for everyone's guidance. Brahma, first of all, the Demiurge, he's the engineer deity. But he's called Vedagarbha. That is, he's impregnated with Vedic knowledge. And you see in his hand, he always has a book, which signifies his possession of the Vedas. Without the Vedas, he couldn't create the universe. It's the logos, it's this seminal creative knowledge by which everything is made.
And then also, because the purpose of the universe is to liberate the fallen souls, therefore Brahma personally also heads up, at least at this universe and at this time, a reclamation party for saving the conditioned soul. He has his own personal effort, in addition to everything else, the Brahma Sampradaya. More about that later. So he disseminates Vedic knowledge throughout the universe for everybody's guidance. So Prabhupada points out that this Vedic knowledge has got two divisions. Nivritti Marga, the path of renunciation and sense gratification, and Pravritti Marga, sense gratification, but regulated, and in such a way that being regulated, a person can also make spiritual advancement. So the karma kanda, a portion of the Vedas, pious activity, household life, economic development, all these things, or everything is regulated by the Vedas. That's necessary. Because only a minority of people take to Nivritti Marga. And it's often seen that before a person can take to Nivritti Marga, they also have to practice for some time, at least regulated sense gratification. So that attraction is not spontaneous, but requires gradual cultivation, more and more becoming renounced. Just as the method of the four ashramas that allows for some regulated sense gratification during the rasta life, but actually mandates that three-fourths of a man's life should be spent absorbed in spiritual activities, brahmacharya, vanaprastha, sannyas. And so this period of householder life, of reproduction and economic development, is bracketed on both sides by renunciation. So that this puts a lid on the amount of sense gratification that's allowed to develop. When sense gratification flourishes without restriction, then you get a runaway civilization like we have now. And the whole purpose of creation is defeated. It's just useless. Why is it the animals instead of human beings? So anyway, this is Brahma's business. To see that the conditions for spiritual, material conditions for spiritual life have to be maintained. So therefore, people need to be engaged in some difficult, tedious, and sometimes really dangerous work. So his preference here, Priyavrata's preference, may be a laudable preference, but as we shall see, it's in a way partial too. Actually, in another purport somewhere, Prabhupada talks about that devotional service is beyond both pravritti and nivritti marga. Pravritti marga, accepting sense objects for sense gratification, is a false position. But renouncing sense objects is also a false position. Because they are neither ours to enjoy nor to renounce. Both the enjoying mood and the renouncing mood are based on the premise of proprietorship. Prabhupada gives the example that if I walk into a bank and say, give me all this money, then I'm a thief. My position is false. And if I walk into the same bank and say, I renounce all the money in this bank, I'm a fool. Because it was never mine to renounce. So actually both these positions, pravritti and nivritti marga, are incomplete. And the actual position of a devotee is neither to renounce the sense objects nor to enjoy them, but to employ them in the service of Krishna without being attached. That's the correct usages of Vishayana, the objects of this world. This will be actually, this is the how it is, the answer, the ultimate answer, how it is that Priyabrata was able to do this, to give up his extremely renounced position, the ancient household of life, so much tedious duty, living in the lap of luxury as a king and so on, and still go back home, back to Godhead, because he's a follower of the path of devotional service, being suitably instructed by Brahma. So this is also Brahma's business, to teach this devotional service. So he has his own party. Prabhupada comments on this in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the ninth chapter of the second canto, it describes the primordial enlightenment of Lord Rama. Rama is given endowed with spiritual knowledge by the Lord. And then Rama, that's also recounted in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, instructs Narada Muni. The Lord gives Rama all the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam in four verses. Kind of a condensed form. And then by understanding it, he is able to explain it to Narada, who expands it and explains it to Vyasadeva, who expands it more. And eventually it comes down. So this is down to us. This is our sampradaya. So at this time, it describes here that Brahma, having come to consciousness, finds himself on the lotus and sees all around him blackness, dark darkness, looks down the stem of the lotus and disappears into the gloom below, can't see where he's coming from. He climbs down the lotus stem, and but there's somehow really he can only go so far. He can't find out. He's looking for his origin, his source. Where do I come from? Why am I here? So all he can see is he's sitting on this lotus and there's this stem going down, so he manages to somehow or other get into that stem or on the stem and climb down. It'll solve the mystery. But he only can get so far, so then he's really baffled. And then he hears these sounds, these two syllables, ta pa, ta pa, which mean penance, austerity. So taking this as the order of the Supreme, as some kind of divine guidance, it's all he had to go on. He then performs 1,000 celestial years severe austerities and penances. And then at the end of that, his eyes are open and he sees the Lord face to face. So at that time, says, Lord Brahma, thus seeing the personality of Godhead in his fullness, was overwhelmed with joy within his heart, and thus in full transcendental love and ecstasy, his eyes filled with tears of love. He thus bowed down before the Lord. That is the way of the highest perfection for the living being, the Paramahamsa. And seeing Brahma present before him, the Lord accepted him as worthy to create living beings, to be controlled as he desired. And thus being much satisfied with him, the Lord shook hands with Brahma and slightly smiling addressed him thus. The Sanskrit is Garesh Prashad, Sprishta, holding, grabbing Brahma's hand. Brahma's shaking hands, grabbed his hand, held his hand. But that's what he did. He actually reached out. Okay. He was so happy. Pritama, he was very much pleased. Prabhupada says here, the creation of the material world is not blind or accidental. This is where we are getting a little prehistory of creation. Pre-creation history. Because Brahma hasn't created the universe yet. So this is all leading up to it. The creation of the material world is not blind or accidental. The living entities who are ever conditioned or nityabandha are thus given a chance for liberation. Under the guidance of his own representative, his being Krishna, like Brahma, the Lord instructs Brahma in Vedic knowledge in order to diffuse this knowledge to the conditioned soul. The conditioned souls are forgetful souls in their relationship with the Lord, and thus a period of creation and the process of dissemination of Vedic knowledge are necessary activities of the Lord. Lord Brahma has a great responsibility in delivering the conditioned souls, and therefore he is very dear to the Lord. Brahma also does his duty very perfectly, not only by generating the living entities, but also by spreading his party for reclaiming the fallen souls. The party is called the Brahma Sampradaya, and any member of this party to date is naturally engaged in reclaiming the fallen souls back to Godhead, back home. The Lord is very much anxious to get back his parts and parcels, stated in the Bhagavad Gita. No one is more dear to than one who takes the task of reclaiming the fallen souls back to Godhead. There are many renegades from the Brahma Sampradaya whose only business is to make men more forgetful of the Lord and thus entangle them more and more in material existence. Such persons are never dear to the Lord, and the Lord sends them deeper into the darkest region of matter, so that such envious demons may not be able to know the Supreme Lord. Anyone, however, preaching the mission of the Lord in the line of the Brahma Sampradaya is always dear to the Lord, and the Lord, being satisfied for such a preacher of the authorized Bhakti Kola, shakes hands with him in great satisfaction. So Prabhupada shows that the same activity that went on at the beginning, that being pleased with the Lord by his tapa, his penance and austerity, shook hands with him in great satisfaction. So if we become good representatives of Brahma's party, that's our party. We are the Brahma Sampradaya. We are members of Lord Brahma's party, and therefore our business is to engage in that same mission to help Brahma fulfill the purposes of creation. He's our founder of our movement, Brahma Sampradaya. Typically, Prabhupada describes the Brahma Sampradaya as the Sampradaya of the book that its great teachers are all noted for writing and distributing Vedic literature. So this is also our emphasis. We're right following on the party line these so many hundreds of thousands of years by Prabhupada writing so many books and our own efforts to produce them and distribute them everywhere, all over the world, to reclaim all these fallen souls who are certainly waiting for us to do so, because we find out that wherever we go and preach Krishna consciousness, there are people who are interested to hear. There's no question about it. There's always an audience by the will of the Lord. So that has to be our business to fulfill. Otherwise, the purpose of creation remains unfulfilled. It just becomes useless. Like a flea circus or something that does nothing. But the point is that people have to learn who they are, who the Lord is, what their relationship with the Lord is, cultivate that relationship, and go back to Godhead. It says here, Prabhupada, this interesting reference, refers to renegades from the Brahma Sampradaya. His only business is to make men more forgetful of the Lord. So that's there also. People who don't fulfill the purposes and instead substitute other purposes, and therefore entangle people, other people, further and further. The Lord, being satisfied with one of preaching the mission of the Lord and the Lion of Sampradaya, any preacher, he says, is dear to the Lord, just like Brahma is. So he says, the Lord, being satisfied with such a preacher, the authorized bhakti cult, shakes hands with him in great satisfaction. So that should be our mission, just as Priya Bhatta is coming to take instructions from Brahma. We also have our instructions from Brahma to engage in this preaching mission. So that means so many things. We've got instruction how to do this from Srila Prabhupada. What it entails, what we need for that purpose of this preaching mission, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is known as an institution. I just heard a devotee give a paper where he says, you know, you can do without the institution, that Krishna consciousness is going to spread. It will be without this institution. But the institution is not an entity in itself, but it provides certain things. A place for people to come for transcendental association, a place for hearing and chanting about the Lord, a place where the Lord is available for darshan, being maintained nicely, the deity form, is to provide all these services for people. So this institution cannot be very lightly dismissed, as it was desired, actually, by Lord Brahma. This is the way of spreading Krishna consciousness. At least the acharyas, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, have all put this effort. Such an institution has to be there, the name and style of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So institutions are hard to put together and they're hard to maintain, but that's the instruction. Here's when Lord Brahma achieved his success by penance. When the Lord says this, the beautiful personality of Godhead addressed Lord Brahma. This is after shaking hands. Oh, Brahma, impregnated with the Vedas, Vedagama. I am very much pleased with your long accumulated penance, with the desire for creation. Hardly am I pleased with the pseudo-mystics. I wish you good luck, O Brahma. You may ask for me, the giver of all benediction, all that you may desire. You may know that the ultimate benediction, as the result of all penances, is to see me by realization. So he describes this performance of penance. He says, such penance, tapa, is my heart and soul, and therefore penance and I am no different. He says, I create this cosmos by such penance, I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only, is tapasya. So Prabhupada says in his purport to this verse, he says, in executing penance, one must be determined to return home back to Godhead, and must decide to undergo all types of tribulations for that end, even from material prosperity, name and fame. One has to undergo severe types of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in this material world. Why then aren't there severe types of penance for the perfection of devotional service? An easygoing life, an attainment of perfection and transcendental realization cannot go together. The Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. The order is received from the Lord, either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master, and to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. One who follows the principle rigidly
is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. So this is one of these purports Prabhupada tells us how it is to be done. So he says that, first of all, you cannot expect, if you're actually a transcendentalist, if you really want to come back to Godhead, you cannot expect to have an easy life. You must be ready to undergo all types of tribulations for that end. You're not ready? Forget it. That's all. Find something else to do. But because he says, even for material prosperity, name and fame, one has to undergo various types of fear. And don't they do that? The highly motivated achievers in the material world, don't they work hard day and night? And so we see that. So why should we suspect that if we want to achieve something in spiritual life, that it should be some different thing that all of a sudden. So Prabhupada says, an easygoing life, and attainment of perfection and transcendental realization cannot go together. So we should know that if we want to actually go back to Godhead, we have to accept this, that I'm rejecting an easygoing life. If I have that desire for an easygoing life, lay back, play with it, take it easy, too hard, keep a nice balance, etc., etc., whatever I term it, so I don't have to work so hard, then we'll not attain perfection. And then Prabhupada has this interesting, he says, the Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. Because more clever than what? Because we may say, yes, yes, I want to go back to home, back to God, and yes, Krishna, I love you, yes, Srila Prabhupada, I want to follow you, order. But he says, he wants to see. That's why it's prescribed. Krishna's attitude is, don't just talk, show me. Once Prabhupada, I remember him saying that, where's the proof that you love me? So this we have seen in my experience, how when Prabhupada would come to some temple, there'd be mobs and mobs of devotees jumping up and down and screaming, Jaya Prabhupada. And then when he went away, some of the devotees vanish and go off through so many nonsensical activities. And what is that Jaya Jaya Prabhupada? Where's the proof? So I mean, that doesn't prove that one approaches it by jumping up and down and saying, Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, that doesn't help. Something more is required, but where's the proof? The meaning of that. That's how much we follow his order. We take the heart. Prabhupada uses this word over and over again. Painstaking. We take pain. That word is in there, pain. There has to be some austerity. He wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. So that has to be that rendering of testimony to Krishna. That I'm willing now to sacrifice everything, all kinds of comforts. The order is received, so this is what he means by painstaking. The order is received from the Lord, either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master. And to execute that order, however painstaking, is a severe type of penance. So, whatever it takes to do it, that I have to do. And the point is that there's no obstacle towards successful execution of that order. Because that's also given by the Lord. That a devotee demonstrates his willingness to do anything, then the Lord makes sure that it comes out successful. So the only really, Prabhupada explains this elsewhere, how he himself started this Krishna consciousness movement. In a hopeless way, he says. He started in a hopeless way. But by the grace of the Lord, it has come out successful. Because he was willing to do just like this. Anything necessary. Take all pains. And he says, one who follows the principle rigidly. So he uses another unfashionable word.
is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. So here is advice from Prabhupada. And we see also, he's not just talking, that Prabhupada also did this. So this is how to become full-fledged members of the Brahma Sampradaya, successful members. And as he said, shake hands personally with the Lord. That's Prabhupada's. So we have to do this. We've been given our order by Srila Prabhupada. And we have to execute that order and pass that order down in the simple succession also, so that it goes on, so that the will of the Lord, the will of Brahma and Krishna is satisfied. So whatever it takes to do that, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, we just have to tolerate it. And actually, you have to tolerate the pleasant just as much as you have to tolerate the unpleasant. And it's just as because of something pleasant is coming, that has to be also endured, just as one endures the unpleasant. Because we become attracted by pleasure, it's the same damage to the spiritual life, avoiding things because of pain. So both those things should be endured to whatever pleasure and pain from their own material or mental platform. And just do our duty. Very rigidly and rigorously with great devotion. So that is the penance that is necessary to achieve the mercy of the Lord. So we should take this instruction to heart and understanding what we have to do. Do it if we want to be serious. Any questions?
We've seen that in the early days of consciousness, there was this very strong sense of doing what was ever necessary to satisfy the Lord, the spiritual master. But I sometimes turn to do the needful mentality. But now the mentality is somewhat shifting into more of a do what we do best in terms of your own psychophysical nature. So it seems to be a shift from that surrender to the neutral platform, as we were just discussing, to accepting all the dependencies and austerities, tolerating that for the sake of the institution, preaching machine, and shifting to a position where you feel comfortable in your psychophysical nature so you can go on the long term project of elevating yourself.
It's a mistake to confuse Varnashram Dharma with not doing the needful, because the Prabhupada has prescribed Varnashram Dharma as what we have to do. It's a simple thing. There were certain things not necessary to get this movement started. Now there's another thing that has to be done to keep the movement going. So that means Varnashram Dharma. But if people think, as they seem to in many cases, that Varnashram Dharma means that no longer am I painstaking and following the order of the Lord, then they're finding an excuse for sense gratification. They think now my economic development comes first, that instead of sacrificing my energy for the temple or for the movement or for spreading Krishna consciousness, now I have to engage in my economic development. So where is that ever part of Varnashram Dharma? It's always Prabhupada's policy, stated doctrine, that everyone who's engaged in economic development has to give 50% of their income for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. He never said that you sacrifice propagation of Krishna consciousness for your own economic development. And by using this Varnashram Dharma, my own psychophysical nature, and I should do things according to my own psychophysical nature. That's all right. But at the same time, I should painstakingly follow the order of the spiritual master. That's all. That's a simple thing. Otherwise, when Prabhupada was here, the movement was kind of a war footing, an emergency footing. Sometimes people have... But now, the order is a little different. Now, Varnashram Dharma. Now, that's for long-term development. The very basic things are here. The temples are here, the deities are here, book production is here, that is done. Now we have to maintain it. So that's no, but still that can't mean that I stop and I get myself disinvolved from the mission of Sri Prabhupada. Then that's just using that for sense gratification. You think that now I'm a householder, I'm going to go out and make money, and now I can enjoy so many facilities? That's another thing Prabhupada's daughter. Especially the people who attach the results of work, this is very painstaking to make money and then give it away. It's really rough. That's even rougher than not having any money. Yeah.
I had a question about what you're saying about ISKCON as an institution and the devotees saying that Krishna consciousness will continue, but probably not through the institution, because one of the things, an opinion I've heard expressed by devotees who aren't so actively working with, let's say, within the institution of ISKCON, their opinion, let's say, towards you and other devotees who are working within ISKCON is that the leaders need to step outside of ISKCON so they can, they're too much involved in the institution that they can't see what's going on or something like that.
I don't know what that means. What's going on that one is not seeing. Anyway, it was Prabhupada's direct instruction. I mean, he didn't work all those years to set up ISKCON, GBC, temple presidents, work it all out, DBT, all these institutions just to have them. Institution is just a rational organization of people to achieve certain collective aims. If you think that those collective aims can be achieved without such a rational organization, you're entitled to that opinion. Bhakti Vinod Thakur had a different opinion. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had a different opinion. Srila Prabhupada had a different opinion. So, myself, I just don't know who I'm saying for following those people. That's all that an institution is. Now, there's so much confusion involved in just not becoming clear in one's mind what that means to be so-called outside the institution. What do you mean by the institution? Define it. What is the institution of ISKCON? Well, you can define it in a very loose way. All those people that consider the ISKCON, Prabhupada's teachings definitive, and why don't they part of the institution? Anybody who cooperates with any other devotee in any preaching project is part of the institution. That depends. The fact that there are many people in ISKCON who are financially independent, who formerly were not, that doesn't mean that there's that they're outside the institution. Unless you define institution as all those people who are financially dependent on ISKCON. Why define it that way? So it's just a lot of unclear thinking about what is meant by the institution. Well, that's all I see. It's just a rational organization by which people can cooperate together to practice and spread Krishna consciousness. You need a temple. There are certain orders, brahmacharya life, and so on, which need institutions, schools. These are all institutions. So it's just some kind of hippie anarchism or something. Any institutions like that, I think that.
So rather than the some criticism, meaning that an institution or the leaders within the institution is that when you're in the institution and you're trying to fulfill the goals of the institution, you sometimes neglect the individual.
Yes.
So you step out of the institution. institution, see, you can see maybe what's going on. Whereas in the Indian institution, you seem to be caught up in the
Well, I mean, people have their revenge if they've never been abused before, because now you see all over the restaurants, very few people, carrying a half a ton of stuff on a row across the tightrope. And all these people who could be helping sitting there outside the institution watching to see whether they're going to fall or not. If they don't fall, I'll have some faith. That's not also a bad thing. There's enough people around, anybody just pitches in a little bit, it's not such a big headed man in the institution. So what happens is because people are not doing their fair share, other people are sacrificing their business. This is what I see all over the movement is actually certain things. And what we mean by the institution, this, like certain things like maintaining Prabhupada's standard of deity worship. A simple thing that Prabhupada asked us to do. Now you can say, and they say, well, that's the institution forcing these people, just like there are people here that are really running frazzled because they have to do so many ideas, so much cooking has to be done, because it's Prabhupada's standard to do worship. Now, that amount of work is in a small amount of people. And they may not last. But there's simply a certain amount of people who are dedicated to saying, well, because Prabhupada said, you know, maintain this. They say, well, it's the institution. It's not the institution, it's God. Since when is Charvihari an institution? And that's really a personal thinking. It's the institution. It's not the temple, it's Charvihari. They've been here for so long, they're supposed to be taken care of a certain way, and this promise was there, the Prabhupada to maintain all this. And if some people can't be bothered and about it, they say, well, you know, as soon as I do anything, I get asked to do more or something like that, I got more, you know, so they have their priorities. But that's why sometimes people get fried within the institutions, because there's so few people that are available to do that. But as a matter of principle, it should be understood that usually as a matter of principle, the best for the individual is best for the institution, not vice versa. And that if it requires so much that people are forced to, you know, to make money and to sacrifice this or that. You can understand that kind of thing. But that's not having to do with institutions generically. That's just with people being used as a means to an end without own self being taken care of. But you know, you get to a dilemma whether, you know, should we cut out two RTs and go above one standard, or should we get somebody and, like, you know, we're trying to force them to take on more and more work. But it's a question of what people want to do. Then, anyway, a lot of this, what the institution is that you see all over, many, many temples in America right now, just like in Washington, D.C., they're down to three RTs a day. They're doing three RTs a day. That's not Prabhupada's standard at all. But that's what happened. And yet you'll find that probably there's a circle of maybe 50, 60, 70 devotees sitting around, you know, writing about the institution. And they should think about Robin and Noah, that's what I said about the quote institution. Yeah?
I was thinking about the response to the argument that Christian consciousness can't lose this area, can't be stripped from the institution.
Yeah, it's not going to be.
In response to that argument, is, yeah, maybe Krishna's not dependent on an institution to do what he wants to do. And if he wants to utilize institution, why can't he? You know, he's got that problem. Why would a Christian can't utilize institutions?
Yeah. Well, you know, to have an organized preaching movement like this was the plan of Bhakti Kumatanku. Formally, the Gaudiya Vaishnava was not organized to be united at all. Bhakti Kumatanku saw that it was going to go on. is the way we come to God. So that basically is what, ever since this has happened, the vision of an international society, of a unified worldwide organization, there have been people, even within their organization, that have profited, but they find it a very, very difficult thing to achieve. But anyway, it's what was desired by them. You know, so we have to say, well, that's what Krishna wants. It's not really my position to judge. As far as I'm concerned, personally, it's not my position to stand in judgment of the ideas of Bhakti and of doctrine, but it's not to say it's fine. Actually, the problem, I see by their efforts, creating and maintaining institutions, they're able to do so much to spread Krishna consciousness. And this is the definitive word that that's the way to go. It's just, I'm going to either be their servant or I'm not going to be their servant.
Mr. Pollock, in the Seven Conscious Spirit Department, can it not be a conclusion, but he could have a lot more to work on?
Yeah, sure. Anything else?
The point, I think, with this problem, in dealing with this spirit, in dealing with personalities, so sometimes personality conflicts get in the way, as I say.
Yeah, sure.
One doesn't want to help institutions to be a certain personality.
Yeah.
That's no rapport, there's no communication rapport that prevents the burden of the institution.
Yeah.
Personality.
Is it based on sentimentality then?
What?
Because some of the sentiments, you know, like is being hurt or hampered by a personality getting in the way of their service, they just leave their service. That's kind of like based on sentimentality,
yeah, sure,
rather than devotional mentality.
Anyway, but he's right, it's a problem, you know, that this is how people have to learn and get along with each other. But people cooperate together to achieve an end. You know, we have institutions all over the place. We have governments of various kinds. And we're just not there. It's the nature of human beings to cooperate together to try to achieve things, because people can't achieve things all by themselves. And they don't. They're social. They have to live together. And they have to find ways and means to do it. And our way and means is to create an institution with Krishna in the center. And if Krishna is actually in the center, and not some other thing, then everything will come out successful. And so it's based on purification of personal purity, trying to keep Krishna in the center. Then if that's, you know, then that's sort of the standard. Then of course, I mean, this personality conflicts in the local Vrindavan. Whenever there's personality, there's conflicts. But it doesn't get in the way of devotional service. Doesn't give what I was standing. That's the spiritual world. And you've got to stop it. Thank you very much. I know it's a short time, but I had it.
Right, he said he has people outside.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm trying to do it. From a church that found, and what I think actually was probably the case, is it was a misunderstanding. You were saying one thing, he was thinking another. And he was saying one thing, and you were thinking another. And it didn't get very right out.
There's some more materials in the BCG that's in the comparison of
did the Library of Congress information come? Yeah.
I don't know.
Thank you. Yeah.